Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. It's over. The Philadelphia Eagles have won Super Bowl 59. They have beaten the Kansas City Chiefs 40-22. It's their second Super Bowl win in 7 years. What a game. What a season. What a team. The greatest Eagles team in modern history. Eagles fans, savor it and rejoice.
That's how it sounded in Philadelphia on the airwaves. Fox now saying 126 million total viewers, 135.7 on television, plus another 14.5 million on NFL digital properties, and obviously being celebrated in Philadelphia. I could think of nobody better to bring on the show to kind of talk about the trajectory of the Eagles franchise and what went down yesterday than Les Bowen, former Philadelphia Daily News and Philadelphia Inquirer Eagles beat reporter, a guy who spent the bulk of his career, really all of his career, 38 years in Philadelphia journalism before he took a buyout. I'm going to ask him about that as well. Les Bowen joining us. Les, how you doing, man?
Doing great, John. Thanks.
Give us an idea. Like, you know, you were around this team for two decades and covering it like nobody else. What was it kind of like for you to watch what went down in the Super Bowl? And because you know the trajectory of the franchise like nobody else.
Yeah, it was surreal. I have like a part-time gig now, and I was able to go down to New Orleans last week for the week leading up to the Super Bowl, do all the interviews and stuff with both teams. And then I came home Friday because I didn't have a game credential. And there were people who were, during the week, who would say flat out, you know, the Eagles are so much better on both lines that this will be a blowout. But I kind of thought, you know, that's being a little too rosy. I mean, you're talking about Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and, you know, that's, I just can't believe that'll happen. But, yeah, they were right. you know, the history of sports history of Philadelphia a little bit, and their championships are few and far between here. And when we get them, they don't tend to come easily. The previous Super Bowl was, Nick Foles in Minnesota, the backup quarterback. And that was kind of a miracle, I think many of us felt. The Phillies won one in 2008, and that was kind of fraught. You know, they had really to go through a lot to get to that. For a Philadelphia team to just go out and blow away the other team in a championship game is something not a lot of us are familiar with. Maybe the 83 Sixers with Moses Malone and Fo, you know, maybe that would be the closest we've ever seen to anything like that. Otherwise, it just isn't in our DNA to see something like this. It's disorienting, John.
Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, Howie Roseman, the general manager, you know, those guys were jumping around in the trophy celebrations and getting the accolades, but you have seen the construction of this over a couple of decades. And what were the key pivot points that the Eagles got right?
Ah, okay. Well, very long story short, Lurie bought the team in 1994. And at that point, the Eagles not only had not won a Super Bowl, but they really hadn't been a serious franchise. They had been in the league for 60 years at that point. They didn't have their own practice facility. They didn't have their own stadium. They shared the Vet with the Phillies. They practiced at the Vet. They had a little pathetic half-size practice bubble literally in the parking lot of the Vet that they practiced in. It just wasn't, they'd never had a deep pockets owner who was willing to spend money, who had money to spend, and who had any kind of vision of what it really takes to win in the NFL. Lurie, even though he was not a Philadelphian, he came from Boston, and he really tried to buy the Patriots first and didn't succeed. Lurie has all those things. He's a pretty smart guy, and he brought in stable people. It took him a while. It took 5 or 6 years. But he hit on Andy Reid, and, you know, his general managers tended to understand the salary cap and things like that that some teams still don't quite seem to get the intricacies of. And, yeah, suddenly this century they've really been a competitive team. They've had maybe a couple losing seasons. They've been in the playoffs an awful lot. With Andy Reid, they were always in the playoffs, but they never won. And eventually Andy, you know, that whole thing ran its course and he left. And then we had the Chip Kelly era, which you know all about.
Yeah.
And, you know, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl, and the roster kind of, I think they made a little bit of an error in trying to keep everybody after that Super Bowl. And some of the guys were on the downside and they overpaid some people, and Carson Wentz didn't really work out like they thought he would, but they got it back together again. They've had probably four really, really, really good drafts since that era, and they've made some incredibly good free agent signings and trades: Saquon Barkley, Zach Bond, people like that, AJ Brown. You know, when you can bring in people like that, you're going to win. And they've always prioritize the offensive and defensive lines. And I really think that seems very simple and trite, but the teams that do that win. And if you can't solidify those things, you don't win. And it just seems like teams pay lip service to that, but they don't really internalize it.
Les, the teams that are able to see opportunity and maybe see around the corner a little bit, they seem to be the same teams in the NFL. And, you know, you've covered that league for a long time. There's a salary cap. There's a draft structure that is designed to create parity. There is a scheduling system that is designed to create parity. And yet we see some of these same teams resurfacing. Is it ownership? Is it head coaching? Is it, you know, what factors do you see sort of fueling the winners who perennially end up at the top of the league?
Well, that's a tough question. That's a good question. Ownership is the base of everything. You know, your owner has to be somebody who understands how the sport works, who doesn't make knee-jerk decisions, who doesn't try to, you don't want a disengaged owner, but you also don't want an owner who thinks he's the general manager, as is the case in, oh, say, another team in the NFC East that, you know, isn't doing too well these days. You want an owner who treasures continuity, who's not eager to make drastic changes all the time. You get an organization together, and you develop a philosophy of what kind of player that organization goes for. You know, Pittsburgh's had that for quite a while. Baltimore has that. New England had it under Belichick, certainly. San Francisco, I think, has that. Everything kind of works together. It's not about they brought in coach so-and-so and he's a genius. You know, that doesn't last in the NFL. It's about organizational goals. I wish I weren't speaking in such generalities, but it's about a culture and everybody buying into the different parts of that make it succeed. And of course, you gotta have a quarterback, you know. And there are franchises that, for whatever reason, can never seem to hit on the quarterback. The Eagles were lucky in this case. They really thought when they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round in 2020, their most immediate thought was, okay, we've been spending a lot of money on expensive backups, veteran backups. We need to retool some of our roster. We don't have that money. If we draft somebody who's pretty good, it'll be cheap for 4 years. and, you know, we'll have a cheap backup to Wentz and somebody who can probably step in if Wentz gets hurt again. I don't think they really anticipated that he was going to be their franchise quarterback. Then there are different people around the league who have different opinions about what tier of quarterback Jalen Hurts belongs in. I think he belongs in the tier of quarterbacks who've been to Super Bowl two times in the last 3 years and won one of them. But, you know, it's a lot of things have to come together. But I think the organizations that that do well, you know, they spend money. They don't they make business decisions with veterans. They don't keep people around who can't play. But at the same time, they understand that the locker room, you have to pay a little bit of attention to people's feelings. And, you know, you have to sign guys that are really crucial. Like the Giants letting Saquon Barkley walk. I mean, from a logical perspective, they had all these reasons about how they didn't really have a good offensive line. They weren't really ready to win. But you let the heart and soul of your team walk away for nothing. Mm-hmm. You don't do stuff like that. You just don't. It doesn't matter, you know, what you don't have. You know, what you do have is something that's solid gold. You know, you figure out a way. You build the stuff around him that you need. You don't just say, well, we don't have any use for that because we're not any good. Anyway, that's a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's valuable. Les Bowen with us, formerly with the Philadelphia Daily News and Philadelphia Inquirer, as the Eagles beat reporter, 2 decades on that beat. I got to ask you about Chip Kelly because you were there. Yeah. You saw it. What went wrong with Chip?
Oh, God.
I'm watching him kind of evolve now back into a play caller. Someday he may get another shot as a head coach, or maybe he's just happy calling plays and making $6 million a year. I don't know. But what do you think happened in his tenure in Philly?
Well, the biggest thing is he can't deal with people, or he couldn't back then anyway. You have to be – it's not college. You know, yeah. You're not dealing with children. You have to have relationships with players and with other coaches and with management. And the owner, you can't just act like you're the person who knows everything and these other people are idiots who are wasting your time. And that was kind of Chip's take on the whole situation. He had some success right out of the box, and it convinced him that he knew everything and that these other people didn't know anything. And, you know, when he was at Oregon, I remember when they hired him, there were stories about how he didn't want to do there was an alumni thing once a week that he was supposed to go to, that he didn't want to go to, you know. That's part of your job, you know. And in the NFL, the locker room is part of your job. Making players believe in you and what you're trying to get them to do is part of your job. And Chip didn't have a lot of use for that. And when he got the idea that he was really smarter than everybody else, he started trading players away, and they were disastrous trades. LeSean McCoy for Kiko Alonso was one of them. He basically tore down the roster, and the team went really flat. He had his whole thing about the hurry-up worked really well, again, right out of the box, but over time, teams adjusted to it, and they realized that even though the pace was frantic, the Eagles had to simplify things so much to run at that pace that there were only about a half a dozen plays, and you could pretty much figure out from formation and so forth, situation, what they were going to do. And it just all kind of all came crashing down on him. And he might have gotten more time to figure it out if he hadn't been so dismissive of all the people around him, including the owner. And, you know, the owner's the owner. You can't be dismissive of the owner. So anyway, then in a nutshell, that was pretty much it. I kind of liked covering Chip. He's a smart guy. He's kind of funny sometimes and droll. I had a good relationship with him, and he certainly did a great job at Ohio State last year. I thought that was a really good role for him. But I guess even in the NIL era, an offensive coordinator at Ohio State has to do some recruiting, and I guess he probably wasn't real gung-ho about that. It'll be interesting to see what he brings to the Raiders. He certainly did a lot more stuff at Ohio State than he was doing with the Eagles, you know, in terms of complexity and variety. So it can work. The Raiders seem to be kind of a cursed franchise for the last couple of decades.
But, right.
But we'll see. You know, I mean, it's personality-wise, I wonder if he can be an NFL head coach, because more and more, I think it's about getting, like I said, getting the players to believe in what you're selling.
Yeah.
And Chip's not a salesman. He really isn't.
I find it interesting because it's kind of, you know, the guys who are great recruiters often have that draw with the locker room, right? Because they can connect.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, and he is not, you know, he never recruited at a high level. He, you know, his team that played Auburn for the national title in 2011 did not have a first-round NFL draft pick in the subsequent draft. Like, it was a lot of system stuff. So I think there's part of him, and I talked to him after the Ohio State game, I think, Les, there's part of him that is really happy just calling plays, and maybe that's who he is in the NFL.
It might be. And, you know, the NFL is not a system thing. I mean, systems make a splash, but that's – nobody wins consistently because of a system, I don't think. You know, I think it's more about culture and getting people to play to their play for each other. You know, that's the key to winning, really, more than any system you run.
Les Bowen, 20 years on the beat at the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. Story goes that, you know, you were coming back for one more season, and then they said, listen, we're offering a buyout. You basically get paid the same amount of money not to do the work, not to be on the beat. For the rest of us out here who are, dreaming on that day where we all retire, audience or not, whatever career they're in, give us an idea of what that looked like for you and felt like for you after two decades on the beat to step away.
Yeah, it's been, I've been fine, John, but it is weird. They offered the buyout. I was 65. They didn't say I had to take it, but there was a lot of emphasis on getting younger people into the department, and I knew that it wasn't going to be like, you know, my star was not going to ascend any further than it had. And it was COVID also. We were just coming out of COVID, and it had been just a terrible experience trying to cover the NFL via Zoom and stuff like that. And I felt like I was ready to step away, and I was. But I've been very, very lucky. I didn't have to worry about the money, you know, so much. But since then, I've tried to sort of keep a toe in. And that's very difficult, I find, with the NFL. The Eagles have a huge press corps, and they don't want to give you a credential, basically, unless you're with a significant outlet. And so that's been a little bit of a struggle. Even you want to be able to, you know, keep in contact with people you know and see familiar faces and say hi to Brandon Graham once in a while, you know. And they make it very difficult. But I did get down to New Orleans last week, and, you know, I have a good life. I can't complain at all. It's a good way. You know, right now I do about the amount of work that I like to do for an outlet called PHLY, which is part of the All City Network. And, you know, they let me do whatever I want, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Les, I appreciate you coming on. What was the scene kind of in you know, your home, your town, and you know, Philadelphia Eagles fans, you know, today? I mean, are they basking in it?
Yeah.
Did they go to work today? What was it like?
Oh, nobody went to work. It's delirium, pandemonium. It's not like 7 years ago. 7 years ago was so profound because they'd never won a Super Bowl. And the Eagles mean so much to people here. You know, they had the parade that year, and there were people who took the urns with their relative ashes and held them up, you know, at the parade. I don't think it's quite like that. I kind of wrote about it today. I think that was a championship for the people who had suffered through the 60s and 70s and Buddy Ryan and Andy and all the stuff. And this feels like a different era. This feels like there are a lot of younger fans now, like my two sons, who, you know, winning the Super Bowl seems to be something that they've seen twice and they look forward to seeing again. They have a good young team, and, you know, this is kind of, it's more of a looking forward thing than looking back at this point, I think, if that makes any sense. It has a little bit of a different feel to it.
I love it. Les Bowen, I appreciate you joining us. Thank you for the wisdom, the expertise, and your time.
Call anytime, John. Thank you very much.
You bet. There he goes, Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. He's on that beat for two decades. Leave it here. You got the BFT.